Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for April 12, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gager. Education, Government, and Politics, Capital Clicks. Governor Kim Reynolds announces grant program expanding summer food assistance for children by Robin Opsahl, April 10, 2024. Iowa school districts and communities will be able to apply for grants through the State Department of Education to provide additional meals and food to children over the summer, Governor Kim Reynolds announced Wednesday. The new state-directed Summer Meal Program Expansion Grant will provide $900,000 in grants to help schools and qualified groups expand existing child nutrition assistance programs, the Summer Food Service Program, and Seamless Summer Option that are collaboratively administered through the State Education Department and U.S. Department of Agriculture. The grants will be used to create more summer meal sites for Iowans under age 18, especially in underserved areas, according to the news release. Reynolds said providing Iowa youth with free, nutritious meals when school is not in session, quote, has always been a priority, end quote. Quote, with the Summer Meal Program Expansion Grant, we will expand these well-established programs across our state to ensure Iowa's youth have meals that are healthy and use local community farms and vendors when possible, Reynolds said in the news release. Democrats and food assistance advocates have criticized the governor and Republican lawmakers for declining to participate in the Summer Electronic Benefits Transfer for Children program in 2024. The USDA program, known as Summer EBT, provides families of children eligible for free or reduced price meals at school with EBT cards, giving $40 of food assistance per child each month over the summer months. Though 35 states have moved to participate in the program, Iowa officials said in December they did not believe the Summer EBT program was the best way to expand summer food assistance for children. State officials cited the expected $2.2 million cost of implementation for the state and administrative costs, as well as the lack of, quote, strong nutritional focus, end quote, in spending requirements for the benefits. Advocates supporting the Summer EBT program expressed disappointment with the state's decision not to participate and criticized Republicans' focus on limiting which foods low-income people can purchase through food assistance benefits. Democrats, including Representative Sammy Sheets, Democrat, Cedar Rapids, have also criticized the lack of action in the session on measures like House File 575 that would have provided free breakfasts and lunches to students who qualify for free and reduced-cost lunches. Senator Sarah Trone Garriott, Democrat, West Des Moines, said she appreciated the governor taking action on feeding children in need, but the grant program, quote, amounts to crumbs for Iowa kids, end quote. She said meal sites are important, but the summer EBT program would make food and resources more accessible for families during the summer. Quote, while summer feeding programs have their place, they are not accessible to all Iowa families, Trone Garriott said in a statement. Families must bring their children to and from the site every day, which is impossible for most working families. There are many Iowa school districts and entire counties that don't even have a feeding site. As a result, these programs assisted less than 20,000 children last year, end quote. She said the governor could have pursued meal site expansions while participating in the summer EBT program, but that Reynolds, quote, put politics before the health and well-being of our kids, end quote. Schools participating in the National School Lunch or School Breakfast programs can apply for additional funding through the new grant program as a sponsor through the Summer Food Service Program or Seamless Summer Option programs, and other organizations can participate as sponsors through the Summer Food Service Program. Sponsors would be able to use the grant funding to serve meals during the summer at sites like schools, libraries, parks, or other community centers, with a focus on new meal sites in areas where 50% or more of children are eligible for free or reduced meals, and in areas that had two or fewer current meal sites serving the community. Applications for the grants are now open at iowagrants.gov, with a deadline of May 7th. Sponsors are eligible for a total of up to $20,000 for current program participants and up to $30,000 for new participants. With food reimbursement funding going to food purchases, program outreach, and other operational costs not currently covered through the existing program. The grant program will use funds allocated to Iowa by the 2021 Federal American Rescue Plan Act. Iowa Department of Education Director Mackenzie Snow said the grant program would help more Iowa students access healthy meals over summer break. Quote, through partnership with community-based providers and schools, the Summer Meal Program Expansion Grant will build upon family-focused solutions to support child nutrition and well-being in the summer, said Iowa Department of Education Director Mackenzie Snow. The Iowa Department of Education remains committed to supporting students with healthy meals and food options as it supports communities in growing the impact of existing child nutrition programs. Ag and Environment, Government and Politics, Feds. A dozen Iowa water suppliers need to fix forever chemical contamination. By Jared Strong, April 10, 2024. At least 12 community drinking water supplies in Iowa are unacceptably contaminated with enduring chemicals linked to various health ailments under new restrictions announced Wednesday by federal regulators. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency implemented a new drinking water standard that limits certain perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances, commonly known as PFAS or, quote, forever chemicals, end quote, to almost none. It's the first time in more than a decade that the EPA has issued a new regulation that will require Iowa water suppliers to reduce or eliminate a contaminant for public safety, said Corey McCoyd, an Iowa Department of Natural Resources supervisor who oversees water supply compliance. Quote, it's a big deal, he said. PFAS persists in the environment indefinitely and can accumulate in people's bodies, potentially causing a variety of illnesses and cancers. They are used in numerous products for their ability to repel oil and water, and the vast majority of Americans are believed to have detectable amounts of them in their blood. Common sources of significant contamination include their manufacturers such as 3M Company, landfills, and airports, and other sites where firefighting foam has been used. A new federal regulation will generally require water supplies that regularly serve at least 25 people to test for PFAS within the next 3 years and to mitigate its contamination within 5 years. That can be accomplished by finding alternative sources of water or installing equipment to remove the chemicals. DNR testing in recent years of water supplies that are most likely to be contaminated has revealed 12 that will be affected by the new rules, McCoyd said. They include utilities that provide drinking water for residents in Buffalo, Burlington, Comanche, Davenport, Dubuque, Muscatine, Osage, Sioux City, and Tama. Also affected is the Kammerer Mobile Home Park and Bear Crop Science near Muscatine, and a seasonal campground near Bellevue called Petetch that has some year-round residents. Several cities with contaminated water have already worked towards fixing the problem, even if their PFAS concentrations are below the new federal threshold, McCoy said. They include Ames, Burlington, Central City, Rock Valley, and Tama. Burlington, which draws water from the Mississippi River, might spend about $20 million on a well field and water treatment improvements, McCoy said. It's possible that further testing will reveal PFAS contaminations in other water supplies, he said. There are about 1,100 community supplies in Iowa that are subject to the new federal regulation, and the DNR has not tested about 800 of them. McCoy expects that a handful more might be contaminated. Billions of dollars of federal funding are available for testing and mitigation, though it's unclear whether that will cover the cost for all Iowa water supplies, he said. 3M agreed to pay more than $800,000 to install two deeper wells for Comanche, which lies across the Mississippi from one of the company's sites in Illinois. Sioux City is part of a pending lawsuit against PFAS manufacturers, said Brad Poitz, the city's utilities director. The city has a contaminated well that provides drinking water on its south side, and it might cost about $6 million to install a new well, he said. If that's not possible, it might cost $12 million to update a water treatment facility to remove PFAS. Quote, we're just kind of sitting back, waiting to see what our settlement from the lawsuit will be, and then go from there, Poit said. The new rules limit the two most prominent PFAS, PFOA and PFOS, to 4 parts per trillion, which is slightly higher than what current testing methods can detect in water. 3 other variations are limited to 10 parts per trillion. The EPA estimates that the restrictions will benefit about 100 million people and prevent thousands of deaths. State lawmakers consider PFAS disclosure. The Iowa House rejected an effort Wednesday to require manufacturers of commercial fertilizers or soil conditioners to disclose to buyers results of testing for PFAS chemicals. Representative Chuck Eisenhardt, Democrat Dubuque, attempted to attach the amendment to House File 2641, a larger agriculture policy bill, citing the new EPA rules. Quote, "Taking PFAS chemicals out of water can be very expensive. It might not surprise you. The easiest way to prevent PFAS in drinking water is to prevent the pollution from getting into the ground and getting into sources of drinking water to begin with," he said. Representative Mike Sexton, Republican, Rockwell City, the floor manager of the bill, opposed the amendment, saying disclosure on farm chemicals would not solve the problem. Quote, "And I think the problem is, I don't think the government knows how to handle the situation. And I don't know that for us to just put it on fertilizer containers is the answer," he said. "I don't know what the answer is, but I know that our world is just full of PFAS. That is where it all is, folks. And until we can wrap our arms around the whole picture, we're just picking out one thing I don't think fixes the problem," end quote. The amendment failed on a vote of 35-62. Government and politics. Justice. Governor Kim Reynolds signs law making illegal immigration a state crime in Iowa. By Robin Opsahl, April 10, 2024. Governor Kim Reynolds signed a series of bills Wednesday, including a measure making illegal immigration a state crime in Iowa, based on a Texas law currently being challenged in court. Senate File 2340 gives Iowa law enforcement officers the ability to charge people with an aggravated misdemeanor if they have been denied admission, deported, or otherwise removed from the U.S., or if they currently have an order to leave the country. State judges' courts will be allowed to order the deportation of undocumented immigrants, and state agencies and law enforcement will have the ability to transport migrants to U.S. ports of entry to ensure they exit the country, with felony charges possible for not complying with an order to leave. Reynolds said in a statement Wednesday, the law is needed due to President Joe Biden's lack of action on illegal immigration. Quote, "The Biden administration has failed to enforce our nation's immigration laws, putting the protection and safety of Iowans at risk," Reynolds said. "Those who come into our country illegally have broken the law, yet Biden refuses to deport them. This bill gives Iowa law enforcement the power to do what he is unwilling to do, enforce immigration laws already on the books." U.S. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said on March 3rd that the agency has returned or removed more individuals since May 2023 than in any year since 2015. Deportations nearly doubled in fiscal 2023 from the year before, the Washington Post reported. The law is set to go into effect July 1st. However, the measure could be challenged in court. The legislation was modeled after a Texas law passed in 2023, allowing state-level enforcement of federal immigration laws, which is currently being challenged by the U.S. Justice Department and civil rights organizations in a federal court of appeals on constitutional grounds. In late March, Reynolds announced that she plans to deploy 115 Iowa National Guard troops and 10 Iowa Department of Public Safety officers to Texas to support the state's law enforcement efforts along the U.S.-Mexico border. The Iowa Migrant Movement for Justice, an immigration rights organization, called the law a, quote, "ridiculous political stunt," end quote, in a news release Wednesday, saying Reynolds is hurting both Iowa immigrants by signing the bill. Quote, "Welcoming immigrants and refugees is the definition of what," subquote, "Iowa nice," end subquote, "should be," the organization said in a statement. Ellipses. Iowa politicians moved this ridiculous stunt forward in an election year in order to perpetuate partisan campaign rhetoric, drive fear in immigrant communities, and mobilize voters using fear and anti-immigrant sentiment. Immigrants' rights organizations are ready to fight back and work to block this unconstitutional law from going into effect. We know that we all belong here. Iowa is home, and we will stand together as workers, families, and allies to defend each other. Iowa Attorney General Brennan Byrd released a statement praising Reynolds for signing the law, claiming that, quote, not only has Biden left our border wide open, he has secretly flown illegal immigrants into our state in the dead of night, end quote. Quote, there is no doubt that in Biden's America, every state is a border state, Byrd said in a statement. Iowa is sending a clear message that illegal entry will not be tolerated. I applaud Governor Reynolds for taking action to protect Iowans while Biden refuses. Reynolds signed an additional 38 bills Wednesday, covering a wide variety of policies approved by the Republican-led legislature during the 2024 session. A few of the bills signed into law include stormwater and topsoil regulations. Iowa local governments will have to pay for the cost of implementing regulations on stormwater runoff and on topsoil preservation, compaction, placement, or depth that are more restrictive than state and national minimum standards under Senate File 455. While supporters said the measure is needed to increase the availability of affordable housing throughout the state, Democrats said the law will put developers' costs on taxpayers, as any additional cost of regulation will come from local governments' general funds. More options for maternal support changes. Senate File 2252 makes changes to Iowa's More Options for Maternal Support, or MOMS, program, providing grants to maternal health care and support nonprofits that discourage abortion. The law is intended to address problems faced by the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services, as while attempting to set up the system as outlined in the original law. Iowa HHS Director Kelly Garcia told lawmakers in January that the department failed two times to find a qualified applicant to serve as a third-party administrator directing oversight over the program and nonprofits receiving state funds. The legislation would turn over those oversight duties to Iowa HHS directly. AI created pornography. Reynolds also signed into law Senate File 2243, a measure making it a crime to create visual media depicting a minor individual recognizable through their face, likeness, or distinguishing features, engaging in a sexual act or simulation of a sexual act. The creation of these images or videos would be charged as a felony for depictions of a minor. Lawmakers said the legislation was needed as the proliferation of artificial intelligence technologies has led to a dramatic increase in porn being created of a person without their knowledge or consent. Reynolds has also signed into law measures on foreign agricultural land ownership and a repeal of Iowa's gender balance requirements for boards and commissions in April. Education, government, and politics. Iowa Senate approves bill on arming school staff, providing immunity to districts. By Robin Opsahl, April 10, 2024. The Iowa Senate approved a bill Wednesday that would create a permitting system for Iowa school employees wanting to carry firearms on school grounds. House File 2586, approved on a 30-14 vote, would allow school employees who meet training requirements to receive a permit through the Iowa Department of Public Safety for carrying a firearm on school grounds. Qualified immunity from criminal and civil liability for damages, quote, pursuant to the application of reasonable force, end quote, would be provided to school districts and employees in cases involving firearm usage by school personnel. The measure was added as a provision to address concerns raised by Spirit Lake Community School District and other districts that have tried to implement policies allowing school staff to carry firearms under current law, but were denied liability insurance coverage. The Senate removed a provision creating a school security personnel grant through the Department of Education that would provide schools with up to $50,000 in matching funds to put toward hiring police or security officers for schools. The bill's floor manager, Senator Lynn Evans, Republican Aurelia, said the legislation would give Iowa school districts the ability to consider armed school staff as a measure to ensure student safety. Quote, I get a pit in my stomach just thinking about talking about this issue, Evans said. But as a former school administrator, if I didn't have every option available to me on the table to protect those kids, I would be remiss in not exploring each and every one of those options. And I think that's what parents in the state would want, that we are exploring each and every option at the school board table to protect our most valuable resource, our children. The legislation comes in the wake of the January 4th shooting at Perry High School, where a 17-year-old student killed one student and injured three staff members and four students. The Perry High School principal, Dan Marburger, died of injuries sustained in the shooting. Republicans speaking in favor of the bill said it's necessary, especially in rural school districts, to ensure that shooters can be eliminated as quickly as possible to save lives. Senator Jason Schultz, Republican Schleswig, said arming school staff is the best way to ensure the safety of students in these incidents. Quote, "It just simply comes down to seconds are the most valuable thing on the planet in that situation," Schultz said. "And anything you can do to remove the number of seconds before somebody with a weapon faces a murderer with a weapon, you're going to have a lower body count, ellipses. A good guy with a gun is going to stop a bad guy with a gun. Not every single time, but you don't have a chance if the good guy doesn't have a gun." But Democrats argue that the measure will make school less safe for Iowa students and staff. Senator Molly Donahue, Democrat, Cedar Rapids, said there are multiple steps the state can take to ensure school safety by being, quote, proactive instead of reactive, end quote, such as funding mental health support for students, emergency situation training for teachers, and creating threat assessment teams, in addition to passing gun safety measures on issues like firearm storage and universal background checks. Donahue said the legislation will not help teachers or students in realistically handling a school shooting incident. Quote, "As a teacher, I know what this training is for us, working with students. We have 30 seconds, approximately if you're lucky, to figure out if you're going to run, hide, or fight. And you've got a room full of kids," Donahue said. "That leaves very little time for somebody who might be carrying a gun to help protect the school to run out and do that. But while they do that, I also need to remind you that they're leaving children in the classroom who are traumatized, who are scared, and they now have no supervision and nobody to help them through what they're doing." The bill returns to the House for consideration before heading to Governor Kim Reynolds for final approval. Ag and Environment, Government and Politics. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signs law on foreign farmland ownership regulations. By Robin Opsahl, April 9, 2024. Governor Kim Reynolds on Tuesday signed into law new reporting requirements and harsher penalties related to foreign farmland ownership in Iowa. The governor signed Senate File 2204, a measure she has called for since the beginning of the 2024 legislative session. Reynolds said, "Iowa plays an important role in America's food chain, and when Iowa speaks on threats to American agriculture, the country listens." Quote, "With this bill, our message is unmistakable," Reynolds said. "American soil belongs in American hands." The law will grant the state attorney general, currently Republican Brennan Byrd, more powers on oversight related to foreign land ownership, including the ability to subpoena foreign landowners for financial records and land purchase agreements for investigations into potential violations of foreign farmland owner restrictions. While Reynolds and Republicans have praised Iowa's strong laws restricting foreign farmland ownership, existing law limits foreign farmland purchases to 320 acres, with those who had farmland before 1980 allowed to retain their land ownership. Advocates said the measure was necessary to better identify and address potential violations on foreign farmland restrictions in Iowa. Foreign landowners would be required to provide details to the state about their land owned in other states greater than 250 acres, in addition to requiring the Iowa Secretary of State to file an annual report on foreign farmland ownership in Iowa for consideration by state officials. The law also raises fines on violations of reporting requirements. Failing to report holdings every 2 years would be up to $10,000 per violation for foreign landowners, and failure to disclose leases or purchases of farmland by foreign entities would be fined up to 25% of the property's value per violation, a potentially much higher rate than the previous $2,000 fine maximum per violation. Reynolds said at the bill signing that Iowa's laws on foreign agricultural land ownership are recognized as, quote, "some of the strongest in the nation," end quote. But that in the decades since these laws were first passed, countries like China have, quote, "grown significantly more aggressive," end quote, against the U.S., and that the purchase of American land is one strategy used by these foreign entities to gain an edge on the world stage. Quote, "Our state's fertile soil and unmatched production capacity make us a natural target for the strategy," Reynolds said. "Our farm families produce 10% of the nation's food supply, and Iowa ranks as America's top producer of biofuels. That makes us a natural leader in the race to stave off the evolving threat to American agriculture." Byrd praised the legislation Tuesday, saying it will give her office needed tools to protect Iowa farmland. She urged Iowans to contact her office if they have information about improper foreign ownership of farmland in the state. Quote, "Call our office. We'll investigate it," Byrd said. "And we appreciate the tools that we need to make sure that everybody is following the law." According to 2022 data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nearly 514,000 acres of Iowa agricultural land is held by foreign investors. This represents roughly 1.6% of the state's total privately held agricultural land. The largest foreign owner of Iowa land is Canada, with almost 200,000 acres, followed by Italy with more than 104,000 acres. China is a minor landowner in Iowa, with USDA data listing Syngenta Seeds as the only Chinese government-affiliated business owning Iowa land as of 2022, with 265 acres in Boone County. Criminal justice and policing. Justice, working, and economy. Police officer forced to quit after domestic abuse arrest, failed psychological test. Judge finds ex-officer eligible for jobless benefits, abuse charge was dismissed. By Clark Kaufman, April 9, 2024. A Sioux Center police officer who was forced to resign after a domestic abuse arrest, a charge that was later dismissed, and a failed psychological test is entitled to unemployment benefits, a judge has ruled. According to state records, Steve S. Toppett began working for the city of Sioux Center as a full-time police officer in June 2023. When he was hired, he was required to take and pass the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory Test, which is a 600-question survey designed to measure an individual's integrity, character, and suitability as a law enforcement officer, with the answers reviewed by a psychologist. All certified law enforcement officers in Iowa are required to take the test. State records indicate Toppett's test results were inconclusive, and so he sat for the test a second time in July 2023 and passed. On December 7, 2024, Sioux Center Human Resources and Safety Manager Josh Mork met with officials at the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy to seek a resolution to a personal matter of some kind that involved Toppett. The ILEA then ordered Toppett to undergo another psychological test to determine whether he was fit for duty. According to state records, Toppett failed the test, which meant that he was no longer qualified to work as a certified police officer in Iowa. The city then gave Toppett the choice of resigning or being fired, after which Toppett signed a letter of resignation. He subsequently collected unemployment benefits in the amount of $3,570. The city appealed the decision to pay unemployment, which led to a hearing before Administrative Law Judge Elizabeth Johnson. At the hearing, Mork conceded that he had told Toppett he'd be discharged if he did not resign. Johnson noted that when an employee quits under those circumstances, their departure cannot be considered voluntary. As for whether Toppett had committed the sort of willful workplace misconduct that would disqualify him from collecting unemployment, Johnson ruled that while passing the psychological test might be considered a requirement of the job, failing the test does not suggest willful misconduct. Quote, "This is not the type of exam someone can study or prepare for," Johnson said in her ruling. "The examinee either has the necessary attributes at the time of the exam, or they don't." Toppett was ruled eligible for unemployment benefits. Court records indicate that several weeks before he was forced to resign, on October 1, 2023, Toppett was arrested on a charge of domestic abuse assault. Police alleged he assaulted a juvenile female by grabbing her wrist, causing minor visible injuries, and pushing her up a set of stairs, causing her to fall forward, resulting in additional minor injuries. Toppett was also accused of kicking the girl in the knee. Jason Debring, an assistant county attorney in Plymouth County, was named special prosecutor in case on October 6, 2023. 12 days later, Bring filed a motion to dismiss the case, citing a lack of evidence. District Associate Judge Jessica Knoll issued the dismissal order the same day. You are listening to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for April 12, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's continue with this week's stories. Healthcare Justice. Iowa nurse accused of role in million-dollar scheme to defraud Medicare. DOJ. Phone solicitations triggered prescriptions for useless medical devices. By Clark Kaufman, April 9, 2024. A central Iowa nurse is accused of bilking taxpayers out of $1 million by prescribing unneeded Medicare-funded medical devices in return for kickbacks. In a newly filed civil lawsuit, the U.S. Department of Justice alleges that Ashley Brown, a state-licensed advanced registered nurse practitioner from Des Moines, participated in a scheme to defraud Medicare. The DOJ claims Brown prescribed, quote, unreasonable and medically unnecessary, end quote, durable medical equipment for 660 Medicare beneficiaries in return for legal kickbacks. The prescriptions were written between April 2020 and May 2021 and deprived Medicare of $1,055,672, according to the Justice Department. In return for her prescriptions, Brown allegedly collected $17,520. The lawsuit alleges the scheme unfolded in the spring of 2020 as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic that caused a temporary and dramatic reduction in Brown's employment, which was largely tied to dermatology. In response to the financial pressure, Brown allegedly signed a contract with an employment agency, Barton Associates, that helped provide work for physicians and nurses. Barton allegedly offered Brown a telemedicine position with a flexible schedule and attractive pay. Under the terms of the alleged deal, Brown would be paid to assess each patient record given to her and then sign predetermined prescriptions for medical equipment. As part of what the DOJ calls a, quote, scheme for easy cash, end quote, Brown was paid $20 for each patient file she reviewed. Through that process, Brown allegedly ordered costly and unnecessary equipment, including hundreds of back, shoulder, knee, wrist, and elbow orthotic braces for individuals without having had any professional interaction with them. The prescriptions were based on falsified medical records filled out not by people who were medical practitioners, but by telemarketers who had made unsolicited calls to suspected Medicare beneficiaries. Brown allegedly provided no follow-up care to the patients, nor did she assist them or advise them on how to use the devices. The patient files submitted to Brown were sent to her by email, and although she could open and read them, she could not edit or amend them except to affix her signature authorizing the purchase of medical equipment. Over the course of 13 months, Brown allegedly received hundreds of patient assessments for her signature, quote, which she readily and uncritically provided, end quote, according to the DOJ. Many of the records Brown signed allegedly included much of the same false boilerplate language about each patient's purported condition. Quote, Brown outsourced her medical judgment to increase her own profits by failing to provide any meaningful review of patient records or to even have contact with her, quote, patients, the DOJ claims. Quote, frequently, Brown spent only seconds between opening the documents sent for her review and affixing her signature. Knee brace supplied for amputated leg. As an example, the DOJ says that on November 23, 2020, Brown approved and certified prescriptions for 15 different patients spending, quote, a mere 9 seconds per prescription with the records open before attesting to medical necessity, end quote. Those 15 prescriptions cost the taxpayer-funded Medicare program almost $8,000 and would have generated $300 for Brown as payment for the 20 minutes she spent opening the documents and attaching her signature. In one instance, the DOJ says, an Elkhart man received an unsolicited telemarketing call in which he was asked general questions related to aches and pains. The man was then sent a back brace, 2 knee braces, 2 knee brace sleeves, and 2 wrist braces. All 5 of the devices were prescribed by Brown, whom the man had never met. The patient later told investigators he was amused by the receipt of the 2 leg braces since his left leg had been amputated years before. Medicare was allegedly billed $8,292 for the devices and paid $3,355 for them. The DOJ also claimed that Brown was put on notice during her time with Barton Associates that the beneficiaries for whom she was writing prescriptions did not need or even want the medical equipment she prescribed. In May 2020, a patient called Brown to complain of being, quote, wrapped up in a hoax, end quote, and didn't want the prescribed medical equipment. A few months later, in August 2020, Brown allegedly received a voicemail from another Iowan alerting her to the fact that although the two had never had any contact, the, quote, patient, end quote, had just received an unwanted orthotic brace prescribed by Brown. The patient complains the DOJ says, quote, did nothing to slow Brown's pace of prescribing, end quote. Brown only stopped writing the fraudulent prescriptions, the DOJ alleges, when she was contacted by law enforcement in May 2021. Brown is accused of violating the Federal False Claims Act. The DOJ is seeking triple the amount of the United States damages, plus unspecified civil penalties. Brown's license is in good standing with the Iowa Board of Nursing, and she has no record of any disciplinary action against her license. Barton Associates is not a party to the lawsuit, and federal court records indicate there are no pending criminal charges in the case. In 2022, a Kentucky doctor agreed to pay $561,800 to resolve allegations that while partnering with Barton, he violated the False Claims Act by submitting false claims to Medicare for unnecessary equipment. The Iowa Capital Dispatch's calls to Barton Associates were answered by an automated service offering callers a, quote, very expensive, end quote, medical alert device free of charge. When reached by instant messaging, the company routed inquiries for its media affairs office to a website where a payment of a, quote, refundable fee, end quote, was required. The company did not immediately respond to an email sent to the corporate office. Ag and environment. Crop planting is underway amid lingering concerns about deep soil moisture. By Jared Strong, April 11, 2024. Warm soil temperatures and favorable weather have allowed farmers across Iowa to start planting corn and soybeans this week, according to several field agronomists. Wednesday was the earliest planting date for corn to be eligible for federal crop insurance replanting payments, which cover farmers if their young crops are damaged and need to be replaced. The earliest planting date for soybeans was also Wednesday for the southern three tiers of Iowa counties, and it's April 15th for the rest of the state. Quote, kickoff has occurred, and we're just getting going on the first quarter here, said Aaron Sigling, an Iowa State Extension field agronomist who monitors southwest Iowa. Most of the state's topsoil has a temperature of at least 50 degrees, according to Iowa State University data. That temperature is a key threshold for seed germination. Soil temps are predicted to rise into the 60s in the coming days before retreating into the 40s by the end of the week. Air temperatures are expected to peak in the 80s in most of Iowa this weekend, according to the National Weather Service. Quote, given the incredibly warm forecast across entire fields, it should be excellent conditions for that crop to be germinating and getting off to an even start, said Megan Anderson, an extension field agronomist in central Iowa. Heavy rainfall in wide areas of the state in March helped alleviate drought conditions that have persisted for more than 3 years. Still, available soil moisture is far behind what it has been in recent years. About 51% of the state's topsoil and 36% of its subsoil have adequate or surplus moisture, according to a U.S. Department of Agriculture report on Monday. At this time last year, those figures were 78% and 66%. The depleted subsoil is most worrisome for the field agronomists. Quote, we've got adequate topsoil, Sigling said. The rainfall that we got in March and the snow that melted was enough to give us some close to normal topsoil. But you just drive around and look at some of these tile lines and look at some of these low river levels, and it's concerning long term, end quote. About two-thirds of the state is suffering from some measure of drought, according to a Thursday report by the U.S. Drought Monitor. That affected area has declined for weeks and was aided again last week by heavy rainfall in southeast Iowa, which delayed planting in that area. Quote, things are just a bit on the dampish side yet, said Virgil Schmidt, an extension field agronomist who monitors far southeast Iowa. We're kind of the wet spot of Iowa. Over the last week, I've seen more water runoff, more ponding than I've seen in over a year. The soils are holding everything they can hold, end quote. Those rains have alleviated some of the concerns about available water for livestock along the state's southern border, field agronomist Clarabelle Probasco said. Quote, ponds were in a rough state when we came in the spring, she said. A lot of livestock producers were worried about relying on ponds for watering their livestock. Subquote, is it even going to make it through summer? End subquote. But there have been a lot of farms that have made drastic improvements. Education. DMAC offers resources and support to Perry, Tyson pork plant workers. By Brooklyn Dracy, April 11, 2024. Des Moines Area Community College is working to connect workers from the soon-to-close Perry Tyson Foods plant with education and employment resources as the college prepares for the possibility of impacts to its own programming. In the wake of Tyson announcing the closure of its Perry pork processing facility in mid-March, DMAC and other local and state agencies have coordinated with the city to set up resource fairs and partnerships with the goal of giving those impacted by the closure a way forward, hopefully without going too far away, college officials said. The DMAC Board of Trustees spoke with Eddie Diaz, director of the DMAC Perry Van Kirk Career Academy, and DMAC Business Solutions consultant Aaron Chittenden Monday about steps taken so far and what the future holds for the community and the college's programs. Quote, I am extremely proud of the role DMAC has been able to play, DMAC President Rob Denson said in an interview. I mean, we were there right away, working with individuals because there's been a lot of anxiety about the whole process. The city of Perry is leading efforts to collaborate and offer support where needed, Chittenden said. Alongside a local team that includes DMAC staff, the town's Economic Development Group, and Greater Dallas County Development Alliance. A wider group that meets weekly to discuss the response also includes Dallas County Hospital, the school board, and local utility partners. Diaz said they plan to start running a resource center for people who need help with unemployment proceedings or other tasks. Quote, it's been really impressive watching this group work together and identify what are all the different responses that are needed, Chittenden said. The community has already hosted one job and resource fair, Diaz said, with more planned in mid-May and early June. The first fair, which was attended by 300 people, focused on trying to connect people with local jobs. Future fairs will expand the areas where employers are based to 50 miles, then across the state. Employers from all over the Midwest have flocked to Perry, however, and Diaz said almost 150 companies and organizations tried to attend the fair, representing 5,000 open jobs across the region. DMAC is currently working to match Tyson employees with training programs in welding, CNA certification, and English language learning courses. College officials say they hope to provide workers with the skills local employers are looking for in order to stem the flow of people leaving the area to find jobs. One program that Tyson employees were able to enroll in for free, courtesy of the company, was DMAC's Special Industrial Maintenance Training. Denson said Tyson paid its employees' tuition to the program, but there are other sources of funding that can be found to help people keep enrolling. Chittenden said the college is also tapping into its Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses program and Venture School to collaborate with local businesses and encourage Tyson employees who may wish to start a small business to get some training through DMAC. Quote, a lot of it is already built, and we should be able to try to match those people up with some of those programs, Diaz said. Diaz said about 1,300 jobs will be lost with the plant closure, which Tyson has said is scheduled for June 28th. But discussions have caused him and others to expect it to happen closer to the first of the month. Despite Tyson offering incentives for employees to stay until the closure, he said some are already leaving. The Perry Community School District has just under 300 students with a family member employed at the plant, he said, and he expects the district will see a drop in enrollment. That could carry over to the Perry Van Kirk Career Academy, Diaz said, as they work with a large number of Perry high school students. With all of the different employers, both based in and visiting Perry trying to recruit workers, Diaz said they're hoping to offer an array of training opportunities to help people qualify for available jobs. Quote, this is the third time the meatpacking plant has closed down in the last 40 years, and every time it's closed down, a segment of the population uses that as an opportunity to find different opportunities, Diaz said. So if we can get some of these folks to get trained and skilled in other areas in the long term, it might be even better. It's hard to see that right now. Abortion policy, government and politics, healthcare. Iowa Supreme Court hears oral arguments on six-week abortion ban. By Robin Opsahl, April 11, 2024. The Iowa Supreme Court heard oral arguments Thursday from attorneys representing Governor Kim Reynolds and Planned Parenthood on what legal standard laws should apply to restriction on abortion access. The case challenges the six-week abortion ban signed into law during a special session in July 2023. It was brought forward by Planned Parenthood of the Heartland, the Emma Goldman Clinic, reproductive health care providers that perform abortions, as well as Dr. Sarah Traxler and the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa. The so-called, quote, fetal heartbeat, end quote, law bans abortions after cardiac activity can be detected in an embryo, typically as early after 6 weeks of gestation. There are exceptions to the ban in cases of rape, if reported within 45 days to law enforcement or a public health agency or doctor, and in incest, if reported within 140 days, as well as in cases where an abortion is necessary to save the life of the mother. The special session was quickly convened to pass the law following a 3-3 court decision that left an injunction on a similar 2018 law in place, preventing it from taking effect. Justice Thomas D. Waterman wrote in the 2023 ruling that, quote, uncertainty exists about whether a fetal heartbeat bill would be passed today, end quote, as it was passed before the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 2020 that the U.S. Constitution did not guarantee a right to abortion. The new six-week abortion ban was blocked by an injunction in an Iowa district court 3 days after being signed into law. With the legislature again passing the six-week abortion ban, attorneys for the state argued that the court should now follow up on its 2022 ruling that found the state constitution does not guarantee the right to abortion. That ruling found laws on abortion are not subject to strict scrutiny, a legal test requiring that a law serve a, quote, compelling state interest, end quote, using the least restrictive means possible deemed to be valid, but did not name what legal standard should be used to judge abortion laws' viability in the future. Eric Wesson, representing the state at the Supreme Court on Thursday, argued that the, quote, rational basis, end quote, test should be applied when considering the abortion law. The review, a lower standard than strict scrutiny, would mean the law is constitutional if the state has a legitimate reason to enact it. If the court chooses to apply, quote, rational basis, end quote, to laws concerning abortion, the injunction will be removed by the district court, Wesson said, as the law is serving several legitimate interests, including, quote, the right of life, the important value of health and well-being of mothers, and the integrity of medical profession, end quote. Quote, I will note that every single state Supreme Court to apply the rational basis standards of review to a fetal heartbeat statute is found that it survived, Wesson said. Attorney Peter M., representing Planned Parenthood and the ACLU of Iowa, urged the Supreme Court to uphold the, quote, undue burden, end quote, standard for reviewing abortion laws. This standard determines whether laws are overly burdensome or restrictive of individuals' fundamental rights. While abortion access is no longer a fundamental right in Iowa, M. said that this higher standard should remain in place as the rational basis test does not properly account for the significance of abortion access in individuals' lives. Quote, 2 years ago, a plurality of this court stated that autonomy and dominion over one's own body goes into the very heart of what it means to be free, M. said. That's what's at stake in the case. It's Iowans' ability to make decisions, private and personal medical decisions, to exercise bodily autonomy, and to decide whether and when to have children. Rational basis is simply inconsistent with the importance of these rights, end quote. M. also brought up concerns about the larger implications the law has on medical treatment in Iowa, specifically referencing, quote, the implications of this ban on people who are seeking to grow their families via in vitro fertilization, end quote. The law contains language related to, quote, unborn, end quote, children, language which was referenced in an Alabama Supreme Court ruling in February that shut down IVF treatment in the state before the legislature moved to protect the treatment. House Speaker Pat Grassley told reporters Thursday that he understood there were concerns about some of the language present in the bill, but that House Republicans are, quote, hopeful, end quote, that the court rules the law is constitutional. The House passed a separate bill this year, raising penalties for the non-consensual ending of a pregnancy that changed language from referring to the termination of a pregnancy to the death of an, quote, unborn person, end quote. That legislation was not brought forward by the State Judiciary Committee because of its concerns related to its potential impact on the availability of IVF treatments in Iowa. Quote, "We feel very strongly that we wanted to, obviously, protect life, and we've been consistent with that within our caucus," Grassley said. "We've taken a consistent position when it comes to the heartbeat law. I understand some are going to try and point and pick holes in it. But quite frankly, you know, I want to wait and see what the Supreme Court decides before we just sit here and make any speculation on what future actions may need to be or not looked at," end quote. Reynolds released a statement Thursday saying the U.S. Supreme Court's overturn of Roe v. Wade means states have the authority to determine whether to limit abortion. Quote, "For Iowa, the people's elected representatives have drawn a clear line multiple times at when a heartbeat begins," Reynolds said in a news release. "Today, the unborn had their day at the Iowa Supreme Court. As a pro-life governor, I will do everything I can to protect the innocent unborn and promote strong, healthy families." Democrats criticized the abortion ban and called for the court to uphold the injunction. Senator Janice Wiener, Democrat, Iowa City, said in a news release that the Thursday hearing presented, quote, "a clear and convincing argument for upholding the Iowa Constitution, listening to the people of Iowa, and striking down this dangerous law," end quote. Quote, "The six-week abortion ban case heard today in Iowa's highest court remains an unconstitutional attempt by Republican politicians to control the bodies of Iowans and their futures," Wiener said. "Iowans value their freedom, and that includes the freedom to make decisions about their bodies and their health care with their doctors. A majority of Iowans oppose attacks on their health care choices," end quote. The court has until June 30th to issue a ruling on the six-week abortion ban. Ag and environment, government and politics, capital clicks. House votes down measure requiring more inspections of puppy mills. By Kathy Obradovich, April 10th, 2024. The Iowa House rejected a proposal Wednesday to require annual inspections of all state-licensed dog breeding facilities by the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. Quote, "Who doesn't love puppies? We all love puppies. But sadly, Iowa is closing in on number one in the nation for unscrupulous puppy mills," Representative Dave Jacoby, Democrat, Coralville, said. He offered an amendment to a larger agriculture policy bill, House File 2641, that would require an on-site inspection of every state-licensed dog breeding facility every 12 months, as well as require on-site inspections if there was reasonable cause. Currently, the law says the department, quote, "may," end quote, inspect breeding facilities. Jacoby wrote to Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds last summer to call for better enforcement after the seizure of more than 120 dogs from a breeding facility in his Johnson County district. Inspectors reported many of the animals were in distress, and Jacoby said a dozen of them died. Republicans opposed the amendment. Quote, "I love puppies too," Representative Mike Sexton, Republican, Rockville City, the bill's floor manager, said. He added, however, that he's been told IDALS is increasing inspections of breeding facilities. Quote, "IDALS has significantly stepped up their inspection process and helping USDA with their inspections," he said. He called on lawmakers to oppose the amendment, saying time was running short in the legislative session to advance the larger bill to the governor's desk. The amendment failed on a 35-62 vote. And that does it for today's reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for April 12, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gazier. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date.
Since the dawn of humankind, people have used caves to explore, hold religious ceremonies, create art, or avoid the dangers of weather and predators. Partly because of that, they continue to fascinate scientists today. To create a cave, Mother Nature needs three things: water, rock that can be dissolved by it, and lots of time. Rainwater, as it falls through the atmosphere, picks up carbon from CO2 to become a weak carbonic acid. By the time it hits Earth, it's about as acidic as coffee. As it percolates through the soil, it picks up more carbon from decaying plants, becoming a slightly stronger acid. If the rock below the soil is limestone, gypsum, or dolomite, the water can dissolve along tiny cracks. Over many thousands of years, the cracks become channels, then tunnels, and could eventually become caverns. Water might also mix with hydrogen sulfide gas seeping up from natural oil and gas deposits to form sulfuric acid, which can also dissolve the rock. Protected from daily and seasonal changes on the surface, caves can maintain a stable temperature and humidity. In these delicate environments, the remains of ancient animals and humans, which could have quickly decayed on the surface, have been preserved for millennia. Deeper, more isolated caves have preserved bacteria and microbes undisturbed for millions of years. These qualities make caves important sites for researchers, natural time capsules. There's probably an amazing cave near you, so take a trip and get to know your Earth. I'm Scott Tinker, dissolving mysteries on Earth Date.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.